The U.S. House of Representatives votes today on a proposal to limit President Donald Trump's ability to take further military action against Iran. The sponsor of the bill joins us now, Representative Alyssa Slotkin, Democrat representing Michigan's 8th District. Representative Slotkin, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Last week, you were expressing your concerns about this move, and tensions have only ratcheted up since then. You've become the face of Democratic pushback, saying, hey, it's not okay to do this without congressional approval. You need to come to us. You wanted the intel that made the administration go after General Soleimani. Do you feel like you've had that at this point?
Well, we did have a briefing yesterday by Secretary Pompeo and Secretary of Defense Esper and the head of the CIA. We had a very big briefing, and listen, it was classified, so I can't go into the details. I do think it helped me understand a bit more about why things happened and when. But what I'm doing today on the floor of the House is separate from any one piece of intelligence or any one data point. What I'm doing today is just trying to say that if you want to get into, or you inadvertently think we're going to get into a war, you have to do what the Constitution says, which is come back to Congress and ask for authorization of military force. It was actually a pretty simple bill. It doesn't try to limit the president's power of self-defense. Any president always has the right to self-defense of course, the country, but our personnel abroad. So it's not looking to constrain the president in his authorities. It's frankly just restating what the Constitution says about who declares war.
We heard two Republican senators, Mike Lee and Rand Paul, come out of a briefing yesterday highly exercised about the lack of forthcoming information. Let's take a listen to what Senator Lee told reporters, that he resented being told point blank in that briefing not to debate what the president does.
It is not acceptable for officials within the executive branch of government, I don't care whether they're with the CIA, with the Department of Defense, or otherwise, to come in and tell us that we can't debate and discuss the appropriateness of military intervention against Iran. It's un-American, it's unconstitutional, and it's wrong.
Representative Slotkin, have you heard anything from your Republican colleagues in the House about whether they've got the level of detail that they want?
Well, we were all together in the same briefing, and I think most folks came out with more of an understanding, but not feeling like we had the full picture. We asked for a number of reports from the director of the CIA, and I hope that those are going to be forthcoming. But I do think Senator Lee has it right in this very, very simple idea that if we're going to be putting any of our U.S. servicemen and women in harm's way, either, again, because we want to get into a war or because we slide into a war, we should be having a robust conversation as a country, right? My husband was 30 years in the Army. My stepdaughter's in the Army. My son-in-law's unit is at Al Asad Air Base, which was targeted with ballistic missiles. This is not a theoretical exercise for a lot of people. And we owe it to them and to the American public to have a conversation as Congress about whether this is something that we want to do. This is the kind of thing that people always talk about we should have done before the Iraq War, is have a really much more sort of clear-eyed conversation. So I'm very glad that things have calmed down in the past few days. I couldn't be happier. But I was a Shia militia analyst on Iraq. I did 3 tours there. If anyone thinks that Iran is done responding to the killing of Qasem Soleimani, they just don't know Iran. And while they say that they're done for now, I just unfortunately have to assume that they're looking at cyber threats, they're looking at using their Shia proxies in Iraq and other places to attack us in a way that sort of obscures their role. So this is not the end of the story, unfortunately, and I think it's important that Congress has a voice in this.
It seems like the Trump administration does not feel strongly it legally needs congressional approval, or at least they're not acting like it. What's the enforcement mechanism here?
The thing that's important here is we've chosen something called the concurrent resolution. And it's a wonky term, but it's a form of art here we have in Congress that forces a conversation both in the House and the Senate. It's something called privileged, which means that it has to come up for a vote. And that, to me, was an important thing. I am very interested in both the House and the Senate having a real conversation about this and then voting on how they feel about this idea that we uphold the Constitution and that if you're going to send people to war, you need congressional approval. So we did it in this way so that the House and the Senate could be sort of forced to be on record. And then, you know, we don't have an example in history where a prior president has simply just ignored a vote that comes from both the House and the Senate. So the accountability is, you know, the people who are elected to represent the rest of the country are going to have to make a decision on this. And my hope is that the president hears that loud and clear.
The resolution was designed as a check on executive powers. And the CIA has been, at many times in the past few years, a part of an executive infrastructure that led to an expansion of presidential power. Congress was willing to cede authority to the White House. Presidents, including Bush and Obama, made use of both the traditions and the habits of their office. As someone who was there during these times, is there anything that you would say about how this apparatus has participated in overreach?
Yeah. So it's interesting. You know, there is no doubt that under both Bush and Obama and now Trump, you know, these where you stand is where you sit. And presidents always use the most expansive definition of their authorities they possibly can. And that's Democratic and Republican. I think what's different and what's gone on in the past, frankly, almost 20 years is that since 9/11 and really since the Iraq vote in 2000, and I believe it's 2002 or 2003, Congress has largely backed away slowly from their responsibilities to provide oversight on military force. And they did that, I think, through a combination of things. One, you know, in the post 9/11 era, war is pretty different. I mean, you know, it's not like World War II or World War I where we lined up the tanks and we mobilized as a society. We have very different wars going on and very different conflicts going on that really blur the line between war and peace. But number two, ever since that Iraq vote, a lot of members of Congress are, I think, washed their hands of wanting anything to do with having to make a tough call on authorizing military force. You know, I think that after the Iraq war went in a really difficult direction, a lot of people said, huh, maybe I shouldn't authorize that. And it became politically deeply problematic for folks. So they backed away. And, you know, for me, as someone who's married to an Army officer or former retired Army officer, that isn't something that Congress should get to do. This is the responsibility of this body to provide oversight into how we put our young people into conflict. And I'm sorry if it's politically difficult for people. That doesn't mean we get to skip out on our responsibilities.
What are you expecting to see in the region over the next week or so? You've talked about the dangers of American troops pulling out of Iraq. It's not clear if that's going to happen in spite of the Iraqi parliament vote. What does an increasing proxy war between the United States and Iran look like?
Well, listen, I am the first person to hope that we don't see any more tit for tat going on in the Middle East between, you know, us and the Iranians. But I can just tell you, as someone who served three tours in Iraq alongside the military, those Shia groups have the ability to turn on violence when they decide it makes sense for them. And I certainly know on one of my three tours, we had record numbers of rockets and mortars landing in the green zone. They were shot by Shia militias, and those militias were using Iranian rockets and Iranian mortars. Those are the kinds of things that I could see happening and increasing, unfortunately. For me, I mean, I really hope that we do not get kicked out of Iraq. I think that it's important for maintaining a focus on ISIS and making sure that the terrorist, group that took over a huge swath of the Iraqi territory doesn't get to regenerate because we're having a problem with Iran. But I think we need to be prepared for those threats coming out of the Shia militias. I think we need to be prepared for cyber threats. That's something that I've been talking with folks back in Michigan about. As the motto goes, you just need to always be prepared.
Just briefly, in the minute we have left, no matter depending on what happens with the House vote today, if Congress does act as a check on presidential powers, what is the likelihood of getting some consensus on which way to move forward with Iran amid the existing partisan divide?
Well, you know, it's interesting. We have some Republicans who are going to be voting for this bill today, as I understand it, which is very good. I think there actually is a large number of people who are ready to have this conversation about authorizing military force. And I think that that's, you know, right now we're in a moment of high political tension. And so folks are kind of going to their corners a little bit. But I do think that there's a number of people who really believe that Congress needs to step up and live up to its responsibilities. And for me, this is a very personal issue. I want to be a part of those conversations.
Representative Slotkin, thanks for the time today.
Thank you.
Alyssa Slotkin represents Michigan's 8th Congress.